Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archeries podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Myth of Repressed Memory, False Memories, and Allegations of Sexual Abuse is a nonfiction work of psychology, legal analysis, and public controversy by Elizabeth Loftus and Catherine Ketchum. Published in the mid-1990s, it examines the recovered memory movement, especially claims that adults could uncover long-repressed memories of childhood sexual abuse through therapy. Loftus, a leading researcher on memory distortion and eyewitness testimony, argues that memory is not a fixed recording of experience, but a reconstructive process vulnerable to suggestion, expectation, and social pressure. The book does not deny that child sexual abuse occurs or that survivors may remember traumatic experiences. Its central purpose is narrower and more contentious, to challenge the assumption that recovered memories produced under suggestive conditions should be treated as reliable evidence without corroboration. Combining experimental psychology, case discussion, and legal implications, the book became a major intervention in debates about therapy, testimony, and the limits of autobiographical memory. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, recovered memory claims are treated as evidence needing corroboration, not automatic proof. A central argument of the book is that claims of recovered childhood abuse memories should not be accepted as fact merely because they feel emotionally vivid or personally meaningful. Loftus and Ketchum focus on the recovered memory movement, in which adults reported newly remembered abuse after periods of therapy, often involving strong assumptions that present distress must have hidden traumatic origins. The book questions the leap from psychological suffering to a specific historical cause, especially when the memory emerges only after repeated exploration. Its reasoning depends on a distinction between sincerity and accuracy. A person can genuinely believe a memory and still be mistaken about its origin, details, or occurrence. This distinction is important because abuse allegations have serious consequences for families, defendants, therapists, and genuine victims. The book, therefore, argues for external corroboration, careful interviewing, and caution before legal or relational decisions are based on recovered recollections. Its contribution lies in shifting the debate from whether a claimant is lying to whether the process that produced the memory was reliable. Secondly, human memory is presented as reconstructive and vulnerable to suggestion. The book draws on Loftus's broader research program, showing that memory can be altered by later information, leading questions, authority cues, and repeated imagination. Rather than describing memory as a mental archive, Loftus and Ketchum present it as an active reconstruction shaped by current beliefs, social context, and available narratives. This framework is crucial to the book's critique of recovered memories because it explains how false recollections can arise without deliberate deception. If a therapist, family member, or cultural narrative repeatedly implies that abuse must have occurred, a person may begin to visualize, elaborate, and eventually experience an imagined event as remembered. The authors connect this to experimental findings on the misinformation effect and false childhood memories, including the well-known research tradition associated with implanted memories of being lost in a public place. The book uses these ideas to argue that confidence, detail, and emotion are not sufficient indicators of truth. Memory can feel authentic, even when it has been influenced by suggestion. Thirdly, therapeutic techniques are scrutinized for their potential to create false beliefs. A major focus of the book is the role of therapy in shaping memory reports. Loftus and Ketchum criticize practices such as hypnosis, guided imagery, age regression, dream interpretation, repeated questioning, and exercises that encourage clients to search for hidden abuse as an explanation for symptoms. Their concern is not that all therapy is harmful, but that some methods can blur the boundary between imagination, inference, and recollection. When a therapist treats uncertainty as resistance, or interprets lack of memory as evidence of repression, the client may receive powerful cues about what is expected. The book is especially skeptical of symptom checklists that imply common problems such as anxiety, depression, eating difficulties, or relationship trouble are reliable indicators of forgotten sexual abuse. The reasoning is that non-specific symptoms cannot diagnose a specific past event. This topic gives the book its practical relevance. It urges clinicians to avoid leading assumptions, preserve uncertainty, and distinguish therapeutic exploration from factual investigation. Fourthly, the legal system is shown as especially vulnerable to memory-based miscarriages of justice. The book places recovered memory claims within the courtroom, where the stakes of memory reliability become unusually high. Allegations based on recovered memories can lead to criminal prosecution, civil litigation, family rupture, and permanent reputational damage. Loftus and Ketchum argue that courts must be cautious because legal fact-finding requires more than subjective conviction. Their analysis connects recovered memory cases to Loftus's established work on eyewitness testimony, where mistaken identification and confident but inaccurate recollection have long been recognized problems. The concern is not only that false accusations may occur, but that juries and judges may overestimate the meaning of vivid testimony. A recovered memory can be persuasive precisely because it is emotionally intense, yet emotional force does not establish historical accuracy. The book therefore supports stricter evidentiary scrutiny, expert testimony on memory distortion, and a preference for independent corroboration when available. Its legal significance lies in showing how psychological research can inform standards of proof without dismissing the seriousness of abuse allegations. Lastly, the book remains controversial because it challenges both therapeutic certainty and survivor advocacy. The book's influence is inseparable from its controversy. Supporters view it as a necessary scientific correction to therapeutic overreach and moral panic, especially in cases where suggestive methods contributed to accusations that later collapsed or were retracted. Critics have argued that its skepticism may be used too broadly, encouraging disbelief toward people who report real abuse. This tension makes the book more than a technical discussion of memory. It is part of a larger conflict over how societies respond to trauma, accusation, evidence, and authority. Loftus and Ketchum's position is strongest when it warns against treating recovered memories as self-validating. It is more contested when readers interpret the argument as implying that delayed or fragmented memories are generally unreliable. The book stands at the intersection of science and ethics. It seeks to prevent harm from false memories while operating in a domain where disbelief can also cause harm. Its lasting importance comes from forcing careful distinctions rather than offering simple reassurance. In conclusion, The Myth of Repressed Memory is best suited for readers interested in cognitive psychology, psychotherapy ethics, forensic evidence, and the history of public debates about childhood sexual abuse allegations. Clinicians can read it as a warning about suggestion, diagnostic overconfidence, and the danger of turning therapy into an investigative process. Lawyers, judges, and students of criminal justice can benefit from its explanation of why memory testimony requires careful evaluation, especially when recollections emerge after suggestive intervention. General readers will find it useful for understanding why sincerity, emotion, and confidence do not always guarantee accuracy. The book stands out from many works on trauma and abuse because it does not primarily offer a survivor narrative, therapeutic model, or policy program. Instead, it brings laboratory-based memory research into a highly charged social and legal controversy. Compared with broader books on memory, its distinguishing feature is its focused application of false memory research to recovered abuse allegations and courtroom consequences. Its limitations should also be recognized. Readers should not treat it as a denial of real abuse or as the final word on trauma memory. Its enduring value lies in its insistence that compassion and evidentiary caution must coexist when memory becomes the basis for life-altering claims. If you would like to support Dr. Elizabeth Loftus, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.